This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, September 1st, 2004. I'm Deepa Fernandez. It's day three of the Republican National Convention. A crackdown on protesters is intensifying on the streets, while inside the Republicans continue their stage show. And people's movements come out to protest in Mexico City and Buenos Aires. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Attackers in southern Russia are holding hundreds of hostages at a school today, including many children. Reports of the total number of hostages vary between 200 and 400. It's believed between 120 and 200 of those are children. The ITAR TASS news agency reports that 8 people have died. Some 50 students were able to escape. The hostage takers also demanded the release of fighters detained over a series of attacks on police facilities in June. The Justice Department is asked to have the convictions of a suspected Detroit terror cell thrown out, citing prosecutorial misconduct. Jenny Johnson reports on this setback to the administration's war on terror.
The Justice Department is asking the federal judge for a new trial for the 3 men, acknowledging a pattern of mistakes and oversights in the prosecution of the case, according to legal sources. The department said it would not pursue terrorism-related charges against the men, and only fraud charges will remain. The government's dramatic reversal comes after a months-long investigation that determined evidence was withheld from the defense before trial. Government witnesses were said to have given testimony that was wrong or overstated, and evidence, such as a video of the Las Vegas Strip and other landmarks found in the men's apartment, was called into question as terrorism surveillance related. The lead prosecutor in the case, John Covertino, has been under federal investigation for months for misconduct. In return, he has filed a whistleblower lawsuit against Attorney General Ashcroft, alleging that mismanagement and obstruction undermined his efforts. At the time of the conviction in June 2003, Ashcroft asserted the men were in an Al-Qaeda sleeper cell that had plans to carry out an attack. The conviction of the men had represented one of the government's most significant victories in its war on terror. Jenny Johnson, Free Speech Radio News.
A violent land eviction, which took place yesterday in southern Guatemala, left 6 campesinos and 3 policemen dead and dozens more wounded. Jill Replogle reports from Guatemala City.
800 policemen showed up at the Nueva Linda plantation yesterday morning to evict the group of nearly 2,000 rural workers. The workers had been occupying the plantation since last year in protest over the disappearance of one of their leaders involved in a labor dispute with the owner. The campesinos refused to abandon the land, and an armed confrontation began. Tens of thousands of rural workers have been occupying lands around the country in recent years. Some are motivated by hunger and desperation for lack of cultivatable land, while others hope to pressure plantation owners and the government to resolve pending labor disputes. Guatemalan President Oscar Berger said the campesinos involved in yesterday's violence form part of organized criminal groups. Meanwhile, some campesino support groups have denounced the repressive action of the police, saying the real cause of the problem is lack of justice and opportunities for the country's mostly poor rural population. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jill Replogle in Guatemala City.
Officials in Kathmandu issued an indefinite curfew after police fired tear gas on more than 1,000 demonstrators who were reacting to the murder of 12 Nepalese workers who were taken hostage in Iraq. Surendra Fayal reports from Kathmandu that angry groups of protesters attacked the offices of manpower agencies who export cheap laborers to the Middle East.
The Prime Minister announced a compensation of rupees 1 million for each of the affected families. He also said that the manpower companies involved guilty in illegally sending Nepali workers to Iraq would be punished and they would be brought to book. Soon after, breaking news was televised Tuesday evening. Hundreds of people began pouring onto the streets to condemn what they said was a barbaric killing of peace-loving youths. 24 hours later, the Nepalese capital, Kathmandu Valley, was a scene of utter devastation. Cars and motorcycles were on fire. Streets were filled with burning tires and angry mobs of mostly young people. In downtown Kathmandu's Kingsway, they also destroyed the famous Jame Mosque, which is famous among the Nepalese Muslim minority. Surendra Fayal in Kathmandu, reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
A Chilean judge will question former dictator Augusto Pinochet next week about his role in the murders of 19 people who opposed his rule. The court-ordered questioning will be the first time the 88-year-old retired general has been forced to testify before a judge in a human rights case since the Chilean Supreme Court ruled in 2001 that he was mentally incompetent. The country's highest court stripped Pinochet of his immunity from prosecution last Thursday. Some 3,000 people were killed or disappeared during General Pinochet's 17-year rule, which ended in 1990. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.
Last night on the RNC podium, California's actor-turned-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger turned the focus of the GOP to his immigrant success story. However, as Mitch Jeserich reports, immigrant rights activists find the GOP immigrant platform extremely anti-immigrant.
To my fellow immigrants listening tonight, I want you to know how welcome you are in this party.
In his address on Tuesday night to the Republican National Convention, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger attempted to reach out to immigrants living in the United States.
I want other people to get the same chances I did, the same opportunities, and I believe they can.
Though Schwarzenegger spoke optimistically of the American dream for immigrants, back in his own state, he is refusing to sign a bill to allow millions of undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license. The governor is demanding that such driver's licenses be accompanied by a special mark indicating that the person is an undocumented immigrant. That proposal has been rejected by both immigrant rights activists and the author of the driver's license bill, State Senator Gil Cedillo. Edward Hennington works in Senator Cedillo's office.
He wants this kind of mark. And then the interfaith community, especially the Jewish community, said, no way, this is unacceptable. And our position was, this takes us back to the days of separate but equal.
The Republican platform, adopted on Monday, supports President Bush's proposal to create a guest worker program that allows some undocumented immigrants to remain in the United States for 3 years to work. The platform rejects amnesty. The proposal was announced at the beginning of the year, but has since gone nowhere. It is likely to be a big issue in next year's new session of Congress. Republican senatorial candidate Bill Jones is challenging the incumbent, Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer, in California.
I'm supportive of a guest worker program, but not one that leads to amnesty. I think the problem you have is that it's hard to incentivize a separate system running parallel with the system we have. We need to make sure the borders are secure, compensation is provided to California for the costs, but I'm not supporting amnesty at this time.
Immigrant rights groups have rejected Bush's proposal, saying that it resembles a World War II-era bracero program, which brought in Mexicans to work agricultural jobs but failed to fairly compensate them. Bush's plan is also opposed by some of the staunchest conservatives within the Republican Party, but for different reasons. Rosemary Clampett is an Arkansas delegate.
If the people are here illegally, then they do not respect our country, they do not respect our laws, then they do not respect us. We need to do something about that, and that's very serious here.
There are diverse views amongst Republicans on what to do with 12 million undocumented immigrants within the United States. Deanna Bautista is a Republican delegate from California.
You know, honestly, I can't decide, because if they've been here a long time and they've worked hard, then they're doing something for the economy. They're working here. If they're just here and they're kind of, I hate to say it, mooching off the system, then there's no fairness in that.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jeserich at the Republican National Convention.
Over the last 2 days, close to 1,000 people have been arrested across the city while the Republicans praised their ability to promote freedom and liberty. Christopher Sprinkle put together this collage to highlight the contrasts inside and outside of Madison Square Garden.
I'm very fearful. I don't own a television. I'm listening on the radio. That's my only form of information other than the internet.
In 2000, before someone borrowed his line, George Bush promised that help is on the way. Tonight, America can take comfort that help is here.
People in this country are terrified, and they need to unify in action and take the country back. I mean, that's the only way we're going to be able to have a peasant revolution.
Under President Bush's leadership, we will work to protect every human life.
Medea Benjamin just unfurled a banner that read, "Be pro-life, stop the killing in Iraq." She was escorted away.
Our weapons, our awareness, research, and funding. Their medals of honor are pink ribbons. And our leader is President George W. Bush.
Very worried that there are violations of the court order with regard to limitations on political surveillance. We're worried that the videotaping is chilling people, intimidating them from exercising their rights, and that there's no legitimate law enforcement function.
A little second grader came out to welcome us and bellowed, "George Washington." Close, just the wrong George W.
Ladies and gentlemen, No Child Left Behind is working.
If you believe that government should be accountable to the people, not the people to the government, then you are a Republican.
Well, I'm being taken to jail right now for standing on the sidewalk. They're charging me with disorderly conduct. There's a group of people, at least 30 or 40 people who got arrested. They're making me hang up the phone now. They're telling me I can't talk any longer. So I'm gonna have to let you go. They're taking me to central booking. I'm sorry.
The number of arrests as we go to air today is at least 1,500. FSRN's own tech producer Mick Mylan was arrested last night while waiting for Pacifica staff to bring her into the Pennsylvania hotel where she was to begin work. Mylan, who was released this afternoon, says the NYPD told her the mass arrests are to get people off the streets.
The staging docks and central booking were holding cells for not only the grandmothers who had walked obediently double file down the sidewalk, but they were also holding cells for the many exhausted cops attempting to follow the illogical orders that led us and many others through the 8 jail cells over the course of our 18-hour stay.
Mick Mylan, FSRN's tech producer. The total price tag of the RNC won't be known for months. Right now, estimates are up to $166 million, but some city officials and convention watchdogs expect the numbers to grow even higher, with the largest portion going to secure Manhattan and beyond. FSRN's Catherine Comp has more.
The New York City Comptroller's chief economist, John Tepper Marlin, says the $78 million allocated for security at the Republican National Convention is only city costs and doesn't include the price of FBI, Secret Service, and private security details.
The security number originally was estimated at $25 million, and then it went up. We're expecting to pay $50 million in overtime costs alone for the police officers.
The newest figure, about $78 million, also covers about $12 million in counterterrorism training, as well as instruction of First Amendment rights of protesters and the media. And about $18 million is for equipment, like metal barriers around the garden area, bomb-sniffing dogs, and high-tech surveillance cameras. Security stretches far from the Madison Square Garden area as well. Corp Watch Director Prothop Chatterjee says the special interest groups and corporations wining and dining delegates have extensive security at their parties, too.
We were last night at the River Cafe in Brooklyn, and they had a special, you know, dozens of police assigned to that location because the oil and gas industry was throwing a party there. This morning we were at a party being thrown for the New York delegation by the finance industry and banking folks, and they had literally several dozen police cops that were assigned there. In addition, they also have private security. It's a little hard to tell who's there, but there are plenty of people in plain clothes. We've talked to them.
Chatterjee says the fear and paranoia in the post-September 11th environment has made private security a lucrative industry. Professor of Media Criticism at the University of Massachusetts and political reporter Meredith O'Brien agrees, saying the heaviest security measures in convention history were part of the demands from both the Republican and Democratic convention committees.
As part of the agreement to host the conventions, the cities and the host committees agree to provide not only security at the convention facilities, but security at all the hotels, security for out-of-town and foreign diplomats and politicians. So they're providing 24-hour security at also all the Republican Party and Democratic Party facilities and all around the dignitaries. So I'm sure that there are some private contractors who are making money off of this.
O'Brien says there's a lot we don't know about the cost of these conventions, including the price of security and what portion of that might be going to private contractors. Convention organizers have 60 days after it ends to file detailed reports of expenditures, at which time the city will have to provide a breakdown of where the more than $166 million was spent. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Catherine Comp.
The security around Madison Square Garden is so tight that streets that are usually bustling look more like a ghost town, and small businesses are feeling the pain, as FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
You have ID?
I need to get to Penn Station to go to the train.
You gotta go down to 60th Avenue up to 32nd or 34th Street.
The streets are so heavily guarded with police that neither cars nor pedestrians can get through. Madison Square Garden takes up one full city block. During the hours of the convention, which runs approximately from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., 15 blocks on the west side of the convention hall are closed to traffic, and 11 blocks on the east side. Pedestrians are allowed access if they have a convention pass or identification that says they work or live in the area.
I do want to feel safe and protected, but I don't feel like that. I feel like it's a little overboard.
Barbara lives 6 blocks from the convention site, but local residents aren't the only ones offset by the enormous security. Local businesses are losing out. Joe owns the Tempest Bar, an Irish pub, 4.5 blocks from the convention.
It's like Fort Knox here. I can't even get into my own bar here without showing all kinds of IDs.
Joe thought business was going to pick up this week because more than 6,000 delegates came to town. So did hundreds of thousands of protesters, in addition to the locals, street traffic, and tourists. But the delegates are wined and dined with free dinners and taken by bus to Broadway shows and concerts. Again, Joe.
Politicians, etc., told us, oh no, it's going to be good for business, it's going to be good. Business is worse than we could have imagined.
When New York City was selected to host the Republican convention, Mayor Bloomberg estimated that it would provide $150 million in economic activity. The overall economic toll will take weeks to measure, but every business near the convention that FSRN spoke with said it's really bad. And they hope the city will provide some kind of compensation. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Taxi workers in New York City aren't seeing much of the $265 million that the city officials claimed would flow in during the RNC. FSRN's Nell Geiser reports.
Yes, actually I'm working this week because I have to support my family. Or I wouldn't work this week because this week is a lot of traffic and mostly people are not in the city. I mean, I would love to take day off, but...
Asif Sadiq has driven a taxi in New York for 2 years. Like most yellow cab drivers, Sadiq leases his cab from a company that charges about $1,000 per week, requiring drivers to earn back that money before they can turn a profit. Sadiq is Bangladeshi and grew up in the Bronx. He says that so far the Republican National Convention has been disappointing economically.
Business has been really bad because there's a lot of security in the city. Some of the customers... I cannot take him to their destination because roads are blocked.
We pay weekly, so we pay it already before the week starts. So there's no choice for us. We have to work.
Jasveer Singh, who has driven a taxi for 3 years, believes that the smaller number of taxis on the streets has counterbalanced the traffic and street closures.
Some people who pick up daily, they don't work. So there's less cabs. That's why the business not affect too much.
One of the taxi workers who chose not to work for part of the week during the convention was Javin Tariq.
Yesterday I worked like 12 hours. I hardly make a lease, and I did not have even 1 minute rest. And so I was not feeling to go work today.
Tariq is a member of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, a union representing 5,500 drivers. He says Mayor Bloomberg's promise of money for local businesses is ringing hollow.
The mayor provided... these Republicans free buses. I don't know where this money coming from or who gonna get that money in business. I don't see it.
Part of the problem for taxi workers this week may go back to the policies of the Taxi and Limousine Commission.
The TLC is really a pioneer in how to sweat working people in New York City.
Bharavi Desai is a co-founder of the Taxi Workers Alliance.
They maintain horrendous sweatshop conditions. They refuse to regulate the owners of this industry and yet have so many very strict regulations against the taxi cab drivers.
TLC spokesperson Alan Fromberg says that it's up to individual drivers to look out for their bottom line during the RNC.
The driver who really was very thoughtful about planning for the RNC and knew where to be and when to be there at various places throughout the city is probably going to do very well.
The RNC wraps up tomorrow, and Asif Sadiq will be happy to see George Bush and his party vacate the city.
I don't mind him being here and, you know, let him do his job and leave the city, you know.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Geiser in New York.
Meanwhile, on the heels of a Sony Entertainment manager being ordered to pay damages to his former domestic worker, whom he kept as an indentured servant, domestic workers are rallying to get a bill introduced in the New York State Legislature that would protect them from exploitation. Dolores M. Bernal from the DC Radio Co-op reports from New York City.
Nina Ruiz, an immigrant from the Philippines, was employed as a domestic worker in 2001. She worked an average of 18 hours a day, and at night she slept on the dog's bed. She was paid only $300 a year. Her employer was James J. Jackson, the vice president of legal affairs at Sony Entertainment in California, who, according to the LA Times, was ordered to pay more than $500,000 in damages to Ruiz. His wife is also accused of assault and battery. According to the New York City organization Domestic Workers United, which represents domestic workers, stories such as this one in California are common also in the New York metro area.
The people that you're working for, they have this idea in their head that you taking care of a child in their home is not very high on the totem pole.
Arlene Brown is a leader of Domestic Workers United.
And I think this goes all the way back to the wet nurse, back to slavery. I think this is why this job have not changed. I think it is also why domestic workers have been excluded from the labor laws. This is why we do not get any of the benefits.
There are 600,000 domestic workers in the New York metro area. According to organization members, most of them are immigrant women working for less than $2 an hour as housekeepers, nannies, or babysitters and cooks. Current laws do not require employers to pay benefits of any sort. This is why the organization is pushing to have the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights introduced in the New York State Senate. Again, Brown.
We're asking for $14 minimum wage with medical benefits. We really need the medical benefits, and we're saying that if you don't want to pay for the medical benefits, give us $16 and we'll get our own. Then the sick days we pay. Also, it was a matter of severance. There was someone that called me a couple of months ago. They worked for the same family for 18 years. They were let go. Nothing. No severance. No notice.
State Senator Olga Mendez, who represents a district with one of the highest concentrations of immigrants in New York City, promised Domestic Workers United to introduce the bill in July. However, according to organizers, the promise has not been fulfilled, quoting that Mendez's office has avoided the group and that she claimed that it will be very difficult to get $14 an hour for domestic workers since the minimum wage is only $5.15. Dolores Wright is also a member of Domestic Workers United. She protested on Sunday during the Poor People's March in Manhattan.
This convention, what is it about? I mean, there are so many things that we, the lower class, has been going through. As a matter of fact, we don't even have anybody to represent us.
Reporting from New York City, I'm Dolores Bernal.
As Mexico's Vicente Fox prepares to give his annual presidential address, an estimated 250,000 workers throughout Mexico's social security and public education sectors went on strike today to oppose a series of reforms to the country's social security system. Vladimir Flores reports from Oaxaca City.
Mobilizations began yesterday with over 200,000 people demonstrating nationwide against a new package of reforms to the Social Security system. This morning, Social Security administrative staff, healthcare workers, electricians, and public school teachers declared a one-day strike. Oaxaca Union representative Gloria Contreras explains the nature of the strike in the hospitals.
We'll keep open areas like emergencies, intensive care, surgery, the emergency services that patients have a right to. But on this day, without Social Security, an average of 70% of the workers will be absent.
Mexico's Social Security system includes low-cost hospitals, stores, theaters, recreational centers, and other services that have been available to workers for nearly seven decades. Although Social Security is a right guaranteed by the Mexican Constitution, on August 5th, the Mexican Senate approved a package of reforms to key parts of the country's Social Security Code. Since coming to power in 2000, the Fox administration has promoted economic reforms that have encouraged private investment in public areas like health care services and pensions. Antonio Cruz is a member of the Health Department Workers Union.
No olvidamos todavía los mexicanos.
We Mexicans still haven't forgotten Vicente Fox assuring us of a change in government. Yeah, it's been a change in government, handing over our sovereign country to the United States. And as the cherry on top of the cake, to make the rich richer and the poor poorer, he's decreed to exterminate the very social security system that has been so hard fought for by the workers.
As Mexican President Vicente Fox prepares to give his annual presidential address this evening, thousands of federal and local police, along with members of the armed forces, have been called in to guard the Capitol's legislative building and to break up rural road blockades. For FSRN, this is Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca City.
In Argentina, hundreds of unemployed workers and members of leftist groups hurled stones, burned tires, and clashed with police outside the offices of President Néstor Kirchner as IMF chief Rodrigo de Rato met with other Argentine officials nearby to discuss Argentina's massive foreign debt. Matt Golden reports from Buenos Aires.
IMF chief Rodrigo de Rato visited Argentina yesterday for talks to push Argentina to restructure $100 billion in bonds it defaulted on nearly 3 years ago. Rodrigo de Rato said this in a press conference.
To obtain a wide and stable agreement with the private creditors of the Argentine debt, it is an indispensable requirement that Argentina return to a situation of normalcy in its financial relations both nationally and internationally.
Currently, Argentina's total debt to the IMF is about $14.8 billion and is the fund's third largest borrower after Brazil and Turkey. Other opposite voices raise against the IMF and the negotiations that is taking forward the Argentine government. Tomás Devoto, legislator of Buenos Aires, was saying this.
We are continuing with the same policies towards the International Monetary Fund. They've come to supervise us and to dictate what we have to do with our tax surplus. What is necessary is to suspend the payment of the foreign debt and to designate the tax surplus to our country, to the workers, to health, and to education.
Yesterday morning, several protesters occupied the lobby of the Sheraton Hotel, where IMF officials were staying. According to the police, two bombs were found. One exploded at the Banco Francés and the other was defused at outside a McDonald's Corp. But the bloodiest violence occurred at the Plaza de Mayo, where hundreds of protesters tried to enter the Department of Economy, where De Rato was meeting with Minister Labaña, to discuss Argentina's decision to drop out of its year-old $13 billion loan program with the IMF. Demonstrators were met by riot police firing tear gas and rubber bullets. Christian is one of the protest organizers.
Together with other organizations, we have made the political decision to protest in front of the Department of the Economy. We live very badly, with many miseries. This country is bound hands and feet to the interests and agreements with the international organizations.
Over 100 protesters were arrested and issued federal charges. Argentine stocks fell over 1% as growing investor concerns over the economy's recovery. Rato's 10-hour visit to Argentina is the first stop on a four-nation South American tour. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, this is Matt Goldin and Zula Warken from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.